Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Thomas Hazlett. He's a professor of economics and law at George Mason University, and we are talking about the 25th anniversary of the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine. Tom, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
What was the Fairness Doctrine, and why was it a good thing that it got repealed?
So the Fairness Doctrine was a regulation promulgated by the Federal Communications Commission as a condition of a radio or a TV license. And this comes from 1949, the licensees had a two-pronged obligation. A, they had to cover controversial issues of importance in their community. So they couldn't just stand by and not do any news or public affairs reporting. Secondly, they had to cover those issues from a, quote, balanced perspective, unquote.
So that meant they were supposed to show both sides of an issue, that they couldn't just be pimping for one side or one party.
Well, or
that, no, I mean, that's the idea behind
that. That's the idea, plus that they can't just be a classical music station in Connecticut.
Right.
They have to do something that has to do with controversial public issues.
Why is that a bad thing? That sounds great. We're all about fairness, right?
This
is America.
It does sound great.
Yeah.
If we were going to stop at the label, mm-hmm. We'd stop right there. The fact is, however, that there is a frontal conflict between the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and the government considering whether or not the fairness of a particular report passes muster. So in print media, newspapers, for example, it's quite clear that there is no fairness doctrine, nor can there be.
Right.
Not only a fairness doctrine, but a right of reply, equal time rule.
And any journalist, any print journalist would say, you know, how dare the government tell me what we're going to be writing, or a publisher or anything. But that was seen as totally different if we're talking about ABC, NBC, CBS, or local TV over-the-air affiliates. Why were people willing to carve out this gigantic exception to the First Amendment?
Well, I mean, it's not people. It's a certain subset of the population, certainly. And their interests are in favor of what's called the quid pro quo. Now, it's not just the regulators. It's not just, you know, interest groups agitating for more government. Some people might say censorship. Others might call it regulation or responsible, reasonable regulation.
Right.
But the broadcasters themselves were involved in the so-called quid pro quo. This comes literally from the 1927 Radio Act. And in this arrangement,
and the 1927 Radio Act essentially created the modern FCC and the regulation of giving out licenses that gave you a monopoly.
Yeah, what is now the FCC.
Right.
But the fact is that the government gets to set certain licenses into the market, and it sets conditions on how those licenses are used. And if some of the conditions abridge the First Amendment, that's a problem for broadcasters who might want to have free speech. On the other hand, if the broadcasters are getting benefits out of that system, they might go along with it.
Having the license was worth a lot more than having the right of free expression.
On net, yes. Yeah. And so that developed.
You know, what were some of the cases where FCC regulators started turning the screws on broadcasters, or politicians were using the Fairness Doctrine as a way to squelch free speech, even though it was supposed to actually promulgate
yeah.
it?
Well, thankfully, and quite uniquely in this area, we have a documentary record of what happened with political activities to actually silence political opposition under the Fairness Doctrine. It has to do with a very famous Supreme Court case called Red Lion versus FCC. Now, what happened in Red Lion? Well, Red Lion was a tiny AM station in Pennsylvania that had owned by an evangelist, quite conservative, and he had Billy James Hargis on the air buying time for 15 minutes one day. And just after the 1964 election, Hargis attacked a journalist named Fred Cook, who had written a book called Goldwater, Extremist on the Right. Well, Cook sent a letter to the station saying, I demand free equal time. The owner of the station sent back a note saying, look, you can buy 15 minutes for $7.50, the same price we sold it to Mr. Hargis for. And Cook says, no, I get free time. You attack me, it's only fair to get this right of reply, and in fact, that's what the rule is. Well, he went to the FCC with it. The FCC found for Cook. They went to the courts, and the courts went all the way through the process, and the Supreme Court sided with the FCC. Well, It turns out that the case was a setup. The Democratic National Committee had been conducting surveillance, in essence, on all these radio stations. There are a lot of conservative stations, and the Kennedy-Johnson administration was very concerned about their speech, and they literally went into business with a full-time monitoring operation to file fairness doctrine or equal time right of reply requests to harass and intimidate the stations. Hopefully it would be too expensive for them to continue having this form of speech, and that they would just do something else, go to some other evangelical kind of programming. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that documentary record has come out wonderfully in a book by Fred Friendly. After he retired from CBS, wrote a book called The Good Guys, The Bad Guys, and The First Amendment. Mm-hmm. Now, this documentary record was not available to the Supreme Court in 1969. They missed the whole thing.
Right.
They said that, if there had been some chilling effect, we might have found against the government. We don't see any evidence of that. And in fact, the whole thing was a chilling effect. The whole thing was Fred Cook with a large financial backing from some political interests trying to intimidate some speakers who had a viewpoint they didn't like.
Well, you flash forward to the late 1980s, Ronald Reagan, a former broadcaster himself, a guy who knew media somewhat, he got rid of the Fairness Doctrine. Why did he do it?
Well, I think there was some ideological component mm-hmm. to it. But there also was a very hefty evidentiary record that there had been a chilling effect. Mm-hmm. Part of it I've just mentioned, the Fred Friendly book. The FCC did a very large report in 1985 that interviewed people like Dan Rather, who had been involved both as a print journalist and a broadcast journalist, and they documented the chilling effect to the extent that the government documents these kinds of things. So in 1987, the FCC went forward and repealed the regulation. Now, they didn't really want to do it that way. They actually went to the courts originally and asked the court to throw the law out, and the courts laughed at the FCC. They said, look, this is your regulation. Okay, if you want to repeal it, you can repeal it. Now, of course, the reason that even the Reagan FCC went to the courts, they didn't want the liability on this. They knew Congress, the Democratic Congress, was going to be very upset if they took this measure. And, of course, the wrath of Khan came down on the FCC. The Democrats in Congress were very displeased by this deregulatory move.
Did the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine give rise to talk radio? And if so, is that a bad thing?
Well, I think that there's no question that there is a causality that the deregulation allowed there to be much more diversity and controversy. And the whole idea of the Fairness Doctrine was shown to be a chilling effect.
Right.
You undid that chilling effect, and you got a lot more. And you did get Air America, which comes in and out. You get a lot of other stuff. We have a lot of content now, just not on audio, with satellite radio and some of the diversity you do see in radio. But you obviously in the cable world, you have entire channels now that are under a deregulatory regime that specialize in serving ideologically oriented audiences. And that's the sort of diversity in free speech that we never had under the Fairness Doctrine.
I mean, you hear this on a regular basis, people saying we need to bring the Fairness Doctrine back. Is there any real possibility that after this 25-year experiment in much more free speech, much more robust speech from every possible angle, is it likely that the Fairness Doctrine will come back?
It's not likely. I mean, it's, you can say the cattle are out of the corral in this mm-hmm. case. It was always a flimsy rationale to say that the government should be able to license and then to get into content issues from that licensing function just because of the distribution platform. Now, the distribution platforms have converged. And so print media or Reason.com, how do you differentiate between one medium? It's exactly the same content. So the principles have become obliterated beyond all recognition. So we really have moved beyond that. To move back would be very problematic on, just the practical ground. So I don't think it's coming.
I want to thank Tom Hazlett of George Mason University for talking to us about the glorious 25th anniversary of free speech thanks to the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine. Thanks, Tom.
Sure.